Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I'm Susan Larison-Dams, and I cannot help but announce that it is currently noon Pacific, at least where I'm talking, on 12-12-12, which is an interesting convergence right in this moment. Now, I will say that I personally believe that such moments are what we make of them, because calendars can be somewhat arbitrary, and so what do they really mean at a higher level? And yet I do know that this moment in time is sacred to a number of people, and that people are really paying attention to this date, just as they did 11-11-11, and on this show we actually had a special show back then. So I just wanted to honor that moment and what we are all making of it in our own evolution as souls and our own expansion of consciousness. Today on the show, I couldn't have a more appropriate guest, quite honestly, and I am so delighted to have Dr. Christine Page. She is quite a well-known mystical physician, and I know many in metaphysical and spiritual circles have no doubt encountered her work along the way. And what is so highly appropriate about having Christine on the show today is that not only is she the author of several books and an expert on a very powerful form of healing, and today we're going to talk about healing based on the healing power of the sacred woman, which happens to be the title of her latest book. And we are also going to discuss and reflect upon how that relates to an upcoming date, which is December 21st, 2012, which I know many of us are anticipating and wondering what it all means. And Dr. Page actually came into my awareness some years ago because of a book she wrote on that topic, which was really a pioneering work relating 2012 to the divine feminine, so to speak. And the name of that book is 2012 and the Galactic Center, The Return of the Great Mother. Now, Christine is an international seminar leader. She has 30 years experience in healthcare, and she has also been known for another pioneering book called Frontiers of Health, How to Heal the Whole Person, that I'm sure a number of us have encountered. Just a note from New York Times best-selling author Carolyn Miss on her latest book, The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman. Carolyn said, "This book is, quote, a brilliant contribution to health and consciousness literature. Every reader will benefit enormously, seem to be stumbling over my words this morning, enormously from Dr. Christine Page's knowledge and wisdom." And I also wanted to let you know that Christine's website is christinepage.com. It's up on the show page today. There is also an open chat room, and you are welcome to come into the chat and join the discussion there. So without further delay, I am so delighted to welcome Christine onto the program. Hello, Christine. So happy to have you here.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here with you, Susan. And as you said, it's in a few minutes' time, it's going to be 12-12-12-12. It's amazing.
I could not help but acknowledge that. And you know, I'll tell you, I come from a scientific background, too, and have kind of combined that with spirituality. And the skeptic in me says, oh, well, it's just another date on the calendar, right? But then the mystic in me says, these dates are what we make of it, aren't they, when they have a mystical significance to us?
They are, and as you said, we could look at this date, and it might not be the same date in another culture or another religion. But the fact of the matter is, numbers are so important to us. And I feel that it's a bit like when people say, oh, I saw 11:11 on my clock, on my digital clock.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
We know that 11:11 it means something. And everybody says, what does it mean? And I say it means whatever it wants to. But 11:11 is very much, I think, a call for reminding us, wakening us up. And whatever we're doing in that moment, it's like a aha moment. But I think the 12s are all to do the one and the two, the unity, the duality, and when they come together, they create the Trinity. So I feel that this is a time, that today is a wonderful coming together. It's reminding ourselves of mind, body, spirit, or the three qualities of the Trinity. And I think wherever you are, it's a fabulous time to be alive.
Absolutely. And I love that approach to it, because what it really reminds us of is a sense of balance, doesn't it? It's that symmetry, that beautiful symmetry of balance. How can we relate that to our own lives? How can we bring balance into our lives? Because I know that's something you have reflected on many times through your own work.
Oh, absolutely. And we are at this pivotal point in our awareness. I think many people who have studied the mysticism, everybody talks about wanting to get back to a oneness, but get back to a sense of oneness as humanity, as a species, where we're working together rather than working in opposition. And I think even if I just look at my own life, I need to be in that oneness so that there aren't parts of me that are pulling in the opposite directions than perhaps where I'd like to go. And this 2012 has always been seen, that December 21st, 2012, has always been seen as a returning to a oneness that isn't based on everybody thinking the same way, but much more about everybody accepting the differences, which would be a fabulous thing on this planet at this time.
Oh, absolutely. And, one of the things I was telling you prior to the show is I come from a background of very conservative evangelical Christianity. And although when I look back on that, it's easy to judge certain aspects, I have found that as I grow and expand, I can really embrace certain things in love and see, wow, they really got this. And, there is love there. I know many loving people within that belief system. And if we could only honor that we really do share this common connection, even if there are some surface differences, and, some people might very boldly say, no, we don't believe the same. But underlying all of that is really a love and compassion that we can all find through different ways. And so I feel that.
Yes, you're so right. And, where we have been, unfortunately, and this is kind of relating to, again, something that, whether or not this is accepted by everybody, but we consider ourselves at the present time in the Piscean Age. And the Piscean Age will be followed by the Aquarian Age. And these are ages that relate to the positioning of the sun in the sky. But for the last 2,000 years, we've been in the Piscean Age. And I truly believe and know that Jesus' message was very simple. Love thy neighbor as thyself, which is really what we're talking about. Loving yourself and loving someone else as if they were part of you. And I feel that, unfortunately, that message has not been adhered to, because we've actually caused so much polarity. And, in fact, we hate anybody who isn't like us.
Yeah.
So as you said, it's not the philosophies. It's the way those philosophies and those deep teachings within every mysticism, form of mysticism, have been corrupted to the fact that we now consider somebody who does something different from us our enemy. And this the new world view is not about everybody doing it one way, but saying, no, if you do it your way, I accept and love you for your differences. And that's what I'm sure Jesus' message was, as far as I was told when I was being brought up, which was really the message of love. It was loving the differences, and really more so seeing them within ourselves. So that I always say, if someone irritates me, they are showing me a part of myself that I haven't as yet integrated. And I go, wow, that, thank you for coming into my life, because you're showing me something that as yet I still don't love. And I learn to love it by looking at that situation.
You know, it's funny. I had an experience in the last 2 weeks which was somewhat tumultuous, and yet it was a mirror into myself. And I realized that I was reacting to something that was challenging for me. And I saw aspects of myself in that situation. And it becomes that question, really, when we see things that we're still working on, perhaps. You know, we still are all works in progress, and yet there's this perfection as well within that. How can we truly love ourselves? You know, so many people are taught to love their neighbor, and yet they haven't figured out the love yourself part first, and that's tricky.
Exactly. And I think we attract those situations, and especially with our families. You know, some people are still battling their families. I think we all have issues somewhere along the line, and it is about recognizing, wow, these are very special teachers, because you can't get rid of family. You can move away from friends, but family, you've obviously decided, are your greatest teachers, and that's a great place to start.
Absolutely. I realized we launched right into the conversation today, which is so wonderful, and yet I'd like to kind of take a step back for a second and give you the opportunity to tell us, Christine, because I'm really curious, and I know my audience would like to hear, how you became a mystical physician and, you know, what that really means, how it has reflected through your practice over the years. Could you share that with us?
Absolutely. I always have to start by saying that I started off as the mystic and then became the physician. I was very, rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
I was fortunate, and I chose the right parents, in the sense of my mother was very much involved with psychic matters and spiritual matters and esoteric matters when I was a child. And it was very normal for us to discuss this in the family home, and for me to go along to different meetings where we would really talk about anything. There was nothing forbidden.
Yeah.
And my mother was a seeker after truth and was very open. So it wasn't about, well, we've got to therefore take that idea and make that our own. It would be, okay, take what you want from it, and then let's look to the next thing. And I loved that. I mean, that's the sort of way my mind works, which is I'm curious about things and I can take what I want. So I was very fortunate that I learned about astrology and spirit guides and UFOs, ETs, when I was a child. But they were very much part of being brought up, and it was all just normal. And I also had a very strong connection to my own spirit guides. And as a kid, I probably didn't realize what that was. But I have never, ever lost that connection. I had a deep faith in a loving energy, and that loving energy was of being part of the universal force. And so I think that some would call that God. And I just always felt that there was this loving energy, and I could hear my guide speak to me. So that was probably fortunate as well. But I found that as a child, having such an ability to be able to read people, which came along with this intuitiveness, was both a gift and a curse.
Yes.
Because I found it very difficult to disconnect myself and my energies from other people's. And as a child, I didn't realize I was taking on so much. And one of the things that happened that was when people would be suffering, I would feel it and I'd faint.
Oh, my.
Because I didn't know how else to deal with it.
Yeah.
So it became a very strange soul decision to decide to be a doctor.
Yes.
I should have been done something where there were no people suffering, but my soul had a different choice and a different decision, and I became a doctor, and really the greatest challenge for me was not to take on all the energy. And
yeah.
I think in retrospect, I learned through my medicine to do that, because I put on a white coat and I learned to be more detached, and that was good for me. And I also love medicine. I mean, I love looking at why do people get sick and really wanting to understand how can I help them be better, not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually. And I have used, over the years I worked within most forms of medicine, I have delivered babies and looked after and done surgery and mm-hmm. done most of those things, but I always felt that the deeper I could get into people's lives, the better. Most people just want to talk. And one of the questions I always ask people when they present with an illness is, what was going on in your life when you got sick? Yeah. And I find that people will often say to me, I know why I have cancer. And it feels very odd that we don't ask that question more often, because
yes.
I feel that we're missing out on so much healing because we tend to focus on the physical rather than the emotional, or even the fact that this person is saying to me, actually, I needed to get sick in order to change something in my life, move away from something, take time out, whatever it is that they're telling me. And I soon became aware, I'm a homeopath, I've done a lot of complementary medicine, but I soon became aware that until I help people to listen to themselves and listen to their bodies, we will never be well. And that really
yeah.
has been the focus probably for the last 10 years, is helping people to listen to their own intuition, teaching how to listen to the body. And, of course, it's not just listening, but following through. So I always feel I'm a bit of a spiritual cheerleader saying, come on, you can do it. Because we all want support, and we all need someone else who's on our side to make these big changes that are occurring, especially around 2012.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, something that intrigued me from your website was this concept. I know that you do assist people one-on-one. This concept of spiritual supervision when
right.
someone is going through a challenging time. And that really struck me because I know many of us can relate personally to having had times in our lives where, boy, we sure could have used a Dr. Christine Page. and just reading what you provide there is fascinating, and the support that you give people.
I think, you know, I love doing all my sessions, but those supervision
yeah.
sessions, there's a closeness, I think, a sisterhood, a brotherhood. It's
yeah.
like walking with someone along a path for just a period of time, and often that's all we need, is someone who will just hold our hand or just be there to share with, and then we can go on about our merry way again. And I feel we do four sessions. I always ask for a commitment for four sessions because
mm-hmm.
I want to know that if I turn up on that path, you're going to be there. And,
yeah.
And we do it only over a period 4 to 6 weeks apart. So it might take months to get through those four sessions. But I think that is what is so missing at the moment is we feel that in our busy lives, we don't always have time to connect, and especially connect to somebody who's just going to listen to us and possibly offer advice, but more so that they are our friend at that time and that we can
yes.
share with them, often in confidentiality. I mean, obviously my sessions are confidential, but sometimes
yes.
we just want to speak to someone about something that we don't want to go anywhere else, and we just want to share and be able to move on.
Yes, that sounds very powerful. And I will tell you that there has been a thematic area of this show recently where we have explored. We've had multiple guests on to talk about spiritual emergencies. It's a personal interest of mine because I came from such a different background when I awakened. My awakening was very dramatic, and it was actually triggered by a very brief perceived health crisis where I had to go in for some tests. It turned out okay, but it woke me up, and I actually had some experiences that were very mystical, and I lost my grounding and really had to seek assistance, and a lot that assistance isn't necessarily out there.
Yeah.
And you know, I am all the better for this. We're coming on, I guess, 10 years since this first happened to me, and I'm finding there are others that this has happened to, and there are people who have written about it and have explored this. And when I saw your spiritual supervision, because that can also include dark nights of the soul as well, I'm kind of curious.
As I say, often someone will contact me because things, you know, they're having a medical or they're having a spiritual crisis.
Yeah.
And they just want someone to tell them that they're not going crazy and that
so
they will come out of this.
Yes.
very nice to have somebody walk through the darkness with you. And
you know,
just
from the,
you.
Oh, absolutely. From the perspective of your exploration of the healing power based on sacred womanhood, and I guess we're kind of focusing on women for the moment, I'm really curious as to how you recommend people who are awakening right now into maybe experiences that are very new to them, how they also ground that and integrate that into their lives. I know that there's an audience out there who are very interested in this theme, and I was wondering if you could address that briefly.
I think it's the first part of our discussion, or all of our discussion, really is key to this. As a woman, and I know it doesn't matter if you're a man that's listening, but
yes.
As a woman, every month when we have a menstrual cycle, we're still in that cycle, we go into that sort of death period. And so the menses, the bleed, is our recognition that in order to give birth to something new, we must let go of the past. We must clear the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And if women were told that that is a vitally important part, not only of their psyche, but the psyche of the world, I think we would change things. So when we speak about a dark night of the soul, it is a diving down into the underworld, into the deep unknown, and let's just call it unknown, with the trust that within a period of time you'll come out again the other side.
Yes.
But refreshed and with absolutely new seeds and information and new ideas. But we aren't well trained to understand that we have to clear things out and often go into that unknown space before new can arrive. And therefore, I meet lots of people who obviously are told that they are depressed or dispirited or they've got premenstrual tension or they've got
mm-hmm.
heart disease. And they're saying, why is this happening? I'm going, because your heart isn't in what you're doing. You are not allowing yourself to let go and receive. So there are many different forms of obviously both mental and physical illness that I see, which really don't need to be there. They're just trying to help the person to say, let go of what you're doing and start anew.
Yes.
And sometimes, as you obviously had the experience, was, it became a spiritual emergency for you. Something very sudden appeared. But often the case is that you know that something is happening and you're perhaps turning your back on it.
Yes.
And I would say, that illness, most of illness is a wake-up call from the soul. And for some of us, it has to be very acute.
Yes.
And it's where did that come from? But for a lot of us, we know if we're honest that things were changing and we've been putting our resistance up to making that change happen. So that when it does happen acutely, we go, wow, but actually our soul has been preparing us over a little period of
yes.
time to be ready for the change.
Yeah, I suspect my experience was somewhat more direct than some in the sense that, and maybe, I don't know, it's just that for me, I had within me this fear of hell, Christine. And when I faced my own mortality briefly, just through, it was a frightening mammogram, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was enough. It didn't have to be a lot. And it triggered all of that. There was an unresolved conflict within my soul. When I was young, I had been exposed to some New Age concepts, which felt good to me. They felt good. In those days, people really did call it the New Age movements. It was like the end of the 70s when I was a teen. And there was a conflict in my soul over spiritual matters and a denial. I had totally shut down because the conflict was so severe. And it was that medical moment, actually, albeit brief, thankfully it wasn't anything, it was fine, that woke me up that, hey, I have been denying my spirituality. I have no spiritual anchor, and I still don't know if I'm going to hell, which is a pretty major thing. And so I had to face that directly, and it did involve people coming into my life who introduce things. I happen to be very open to mystical experiences, and I opened up very fast and directly confronted my fear of hell. And it's probably why I'm so brave talking about it now, because a lot of people, they don't want to talk about that. And yet I know that for many people, especially in the United States, where this is a really powerful belief among a lot of people, deep down they know it doesn't resonate. And for me, it was a blessing to confront it firsthand, but it was also a bit of a challenge because it was disruptive. It, you know, mystical experiences were not my norm. I was a computer scientist, Christine. Mm-hmm. I had a master's degree in computer science, and you know, I was a mother, and I was pursuing my life, and it woke me up. I wouldn't be doing this show otherwise.
Right.
So I
right.
see exactly what you're saying.
And unfortunately, I mean, sis, if I may say, there's been so much misinformation that's been put out. Now, that's obviously just coming from my point of view. But when we look back at some of the mythology and the history of where things like the word hell came from, that
yeah.
came from the goddess Hel, who was the goddess of regeneration, not retribution.
Yes.
So I'm sorry to say, but things got twisted. And part of that was a desire to not allow, to take away the chaos that comes into our life in order for change to take place. Almost as maybe it was a paternal desire to not let us go through chaos, but by telling us that hell, we mustn't go there, it actually didn't help us, because it actually is when we go into that place of, as you said, when we go, I don't know what the truth is. I don't know
mm-hmm.
if I'm going to die or live. I don't know. You know, suddenly every one of your beliefs get thrown into the fire. And
yes.
I just say some of them burn and some of them are returned to us. But I know I've been through those times myself, even with all my spiritual knowledge. It doesn't necessarily say I take away those fact that those things happen.
Yes.
But I've got a deeper, you know, what I write about in my new latest book is that this earlier on in this year I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I actually did have breast cancer, so I had surgery and I went through radiotherapy. But at no point in my life in that time did I ever think that something was being done to me. My initial thought was, wow, my soul must love me so much it sent me breast cancer, because only that would stop me in my tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to, I never went into battling against it or in any way feeling a victim to it. Did I face my fear of, you know, did I face death, I should say? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But actually I realized that sometimes I have more fear of things in the life than I do in death. And it really showed me where there are times when I don't speak up, when I tend to negate my own needs for the needs of other people.
Yeah.
And, I have changed a lot because of the cancer, and it's given me a tremendous gift as well as a tremendous opportunity to work with people who have had cancer or are having it, because I want to show them that this is not something that's happening to them. It actually is happening so that they can make different decisions. And that those opportunities are so unique. What I saw was that when a crisis happens, such as maybe a divorce or an illness or even a death of a loved one, it's like a door opens for us. And we are being asked or given the opportunity to move through that door. And that's what happened to you. It was, okay, here's the door. It's open. Do you want to go through it? And what I realized that the door will shut, and you may well still get better, and you may well still meet somebody else. But it's these moments when our psyche is confused and like, ah, that the door opens for us.
Yeah.
And it's like we need to get out of our comfort zone to say, do I want to be a butterfly or do I want to stay as a caterpillar? And that's what we all are facing at this time.
I find that you know, as I myself mature through my own journey, I begin to, when you look back at your life, and I'm sure this is the case for people listening, is you can find the gifts of every challenge. And that's sometimes difficult to do at first, but it's there. I really have, and you know, this transcends belief systems, too. I mean, I heard this within conservative Christianity, that there is a reason for every hardship. They may have looked at it in a somewhat different way, and yet it was still all about your growth as a person, too. So,
Absolutely, I agree. And I think especially, again, it's something that we're not always taught to look at, but I will say that working with people, I see these patterns that we have, you know. So we tell ourselves, oh, that always happens to me. People are like that. That's my problem. You know? And once we keep telling us these stories, we don't have to be in any religion. This is just pure psychology. We keep creating exactly what we believe.
Yes.
And that's the hardest part of the whole situation is, can we believe, can we change our thinking if our thinking isn't working for us? So if I don't believe I'm ever going to get a job, then I probably won't get a job. And I can hope and wish and pray, but nothing's going to shift while I have this deep innate belief in my inability to get a job. And there is that need to use some other method to change our mind. And it isn't our thinking. I always remember, you know, what Einstein says about you can't fix the problem at the same level that it created.
Yes.
So thinking differently, just making a different thought doesn't change your thinking. And so often then I use imagination, for instance, just visualize yourself in a different place. Or maybe use your body, you know, as NLP does, where it says, you know, act as if you're already in that job. So
yes.
This changing of the mind is very important, and it is our beliefs. And these beliefs don't have to have come from, as I say, any religion or culture. They're just innate in us that says, no, no, the truth. Well, it isn't the truth. It's a truth according to you at this moment. And that's what's being shaken up around 2012, is that all of us are getting the chance to say, do I want to carry that truth into the next 26,000 years, or am I ready to let it go?
Yes. You know, I have found that the more I explore this, and it's taken me a while. I'm still getting a handle on some of these concepts because it's not always easy to, you know, if you've ever worried in your life. You know, I can think of times when I worried and things still went okay. You know, they probably could have gone better if I hadn't been worrying, but it wasn't exactly my worst nightmare that happened either. And so I reflect on that, and I find myself embracing this co-creation concept and that there is love for us out there, too, that there is loving support and what our role is within that, because I know that we certainly can co-create, and I'm trying to figure out, and you're helping me right here with my own journey live, because this is what this show is like, is we're a lot of us, are awakening to a lot of concepts is that concept of co-creation, that, you know, the divine, we're one with the divine. If God is omnipresent or the goddess, that means within us. And what does that mean, Christine, for the power of our own creativity? What does that truly mean? What are we intended to do in this life? Why are we here?
There are a few thoughts that come to my mind. The first one, I think, is the question you asked a little while back, is what can we do to prepare? And what I really know we can do to prepare is to have fertile soil into which the divine inspiration can appear. We can plant those seeds. And as I was just saying, is the challenge for us is that we don't clear out the past. We don't take the seeds of wisdom, and I like to see it like harvesting, that when it comes to harvest time, it's important for us to eat the fruits of our endeavors, so rarely do we look back, and it's just as you were saying, and we say, well, what did I get out of that? But let us assume that there's always something to get out of something. Just as a tree will give us fruit, there's always some fruit to eat. Some of the fruit might not be worthy to eat, but we should eat the fruit that is good. And then we should let the other fruit fall to the ground and become the compost. But we must also make sure that we take up the old roots. And some of the work I've been doing recently with women, how far back does our woundedness go as women? And I'm sure as men, but as women, I say at least three generations back, you need to ask yourself or ask your mother, your grandmothers, what are the wounds that you're carrying? Because we have been so much as women living out the mythology and the of men for 4,000 years. And I'm not blaming men. I'm just saying is women lost themselves about 4,000 years ago. And since then, we've been asking men, what shall I be? And they tell us, but it's from their perspective. So we fill ourselves with maybe if I should be thinner, fatter, you know, richer, whatever, more beautiful.
Yeah.
There's been a tendency to do that. And I'm just saying that our ancestors, our mother, our grandmothers, our great-grandmothers really didn't have much chance to be much different from that. So until we start to heal the wounds by at least acknowledging that some of those ways of being for our mother and our grandmother were not the most healthy as being a woman, we're never going to get anywhere. And they say that when we heal the last seven generations, we heal the next seven generations to come.
Yes.
So that one of the pieces of healing is not just our own healing, but understanding what are the messages that I received from my mother. And I know that I receive stories about shame and shame of being a woman and don't get pregnant before don't get pregnant and
yes.
married and be a certain way. And all these things were messages that were relevant then and relevant now, but they were out of context with my life, but I carried them as if they were real because I wasn't getting pregnant and yet I still felt ashamed. And so
yes.
I feel that sort of exploration, and maybe sometimes just talking with your mother or even your sisters or your aunts and saying, what do you think it is all about being a woman and or a man? And my husband would say he has very few good role models of what it is to be a healthy man. And
uh-huh.
So what we're looking for is what is it to be a healthy individual? And that means having the willingness to clear out that old earth, as I say, so that when you've had the harvest, when you've eaten the fruit and you've cleared your earth, then you stand back and you let God or Goddess fill you.
Yes.
But you cannot, people aren't lacking inspiration, they're lacking the soil to put it in. And I've taught intuition for a long time, and people have these wonderful insights and they do nothing with it. And they do nothing with it because they usually say something like, oh, well, it won't work. Nothing ever works for me. Oh, well, I need someone else to help me with this because that's my pattern. They live in their old patterns and they never go forward. There's not a lack of ideas and inspiration. There's a lack of our intention or our commitment to follow through.
Wow, that's really powerful. And you know, I know so many of us have experienced this. And I know that a number of people, myself included, you know, we're aiming to finish our first book, for example. And I know there are a lot of aspiring writers out there. And we have so many good ideas, and yet we allow ourselves to be distracted from the goal, I think is what happens. And I think that we can have regret. I mean, when it doesn't go as quickly. And often there is purpose. I think, you know, when I look back, I think, well, you know, if I had rushed that out the door, I wouldn't have known this and that. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
you can find purpose. But at the same time, in this moment, I appreciate that, you know, you do emphasize that follow through. You know, don't doubt yourself, I guess, is what I feel that you're communicating.
Well, you never know. I mean, I remember a lady coming up to me several years ago, and she said, she was doing a visual imagery, and she said 4 years ago during this visual imagery that she was doing, Jesus had come to her and given her a pen and told her to write. And she said to me 4 years later, what do you think I should do?
Oh, my.
And I said, who do you need to come into your life to make it okay? And I hear a lot of people tell me that, you know, I act as an intuitive and mystic on the telephone, and people will say to me, oh, you're good, you're telling me the same thing that five other people have told me. And I say, this isn't about me being good, this is about when are you going to do it? And mm-hmm. I will tell you that your spirit guidance, you know, my spirit guidance, they can't do more. They cannot overcome our free will. So if they can drop pens in our lap and they can send people to us, but they cannot make us do it. And I see many people dying with their seeds still intact, that they never, ever planted them. And I feel that would be a regret for me if I went back when I've still got my seeds and I go, look, look, they're still intact.
Yes.
And I think, you know, my God or Goddess may say to me, we didn't want them back. We wanted you to do something with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I also use as an intuitive idea that if the timing is not right, I'll often say to my higher self, my guidance, if I'm not supposed to do this at this time, make it really clear. And they will. I mean, we've had snow in London when I used to live there in the middle of June, you know.
Yes.
And I've had passports disappear and tickets disappear when I'm not meant to go on a trip. And so I think that if we want to be more, you know, when we're more in tune, and if I'm only saying that this is a great way of when you're in a moment of doubt, put the message out and said, if I'm not meant to do this, make it clear. If I am meant to do it, make it really clear.
Yeah.
And give them a time limit, you know, within the next 24 hours. And then if there's a message, then follow through. But don't wait for the next message and the next message and the next message.
No, I get that. And I've actually had that happen. I had an experience where I was going to facilitate an event potentially for someone. And I wasn't sure, you know. I think deep down I knew. But I had to ask, you know, for confirmation. And I actually made a very specific request. I said, if you don't want me to do this activity, schedule this other alternative activity that I knew might be scheduled in that time frame. It was like a local body-mind-spirit event during that weekend. And I made that very clear to Spirit. With by the end of the day, Christine, I go to the page of this local expo, and they had scheduled the event exactly that weekend.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful.
Utter clarity. They made it easy for me. You know, does it have to be so hard if we just ask?
Oh, it really doesn't. And that's what I hear from the spirit world. They say, why don't they ask us for help? We can't step in without that. I did something similar. I used to say, if I'm not meant to teach this, let there only be 5 people who sign up. And when someone would phone me up and say, oh, I'm so sorry, there's only 5 people, I'd go, thank you, we're cancelling.
Uh-huh.
And it was always only 5. It was never 6. It was never 4. It would just always be right. And I've used this, I mean, I just encourage people to ask for more help. It's not the sort of help that says, oh, I want this to happen. You can't, that isn't going to happen. It's being detached enough to say, if I'm not meant to go out with this person, please make it really clear. You know, let me learn something about them that I will then make a decision or something. So be precise. Don't, you know, hope and pray, because that gets in the way of really seeing the truth of what a situation's about.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. Sometimes deep in your heart, you do have an inkling of where you're guided, but sometimes you just need that extra affirmation. You really do, especially sometimes when it's, you know, often these are business decisions or whatever. And for some reason, for me, those can be challenging, you know, because I tend to spread myself too thin. A lot of women do.
Yeah.
And I needed that clarity. We have an interesting question from the chat room, Christine. I wanted to share this with you because I think this will also give us an opportunity to explore some more from your book as well. This is from, again, a chat room participant here with the show today. I am an American living in Jordan. What does Christine think is the best way to inspire and love the women in the Middle East to help them step into their power without shaking up things too much to scare them?
Oh, great question. Great question.
Yes.
I think that the one wonderful, if we start with the premise that every woman, whatever her color and her shape and her size on the outside, is the same on the inside. The beautiful thing about women is they have a power to and a desire to connect to each other. So that connectivity, you know, you only have to go to a ladies' restroom and everybody's talking about someone's shoes or whatever. Women chatter. And they do that to connect, to find a commonality. And so my answer would be, find the commonality. Now, the most classic commonality is obviously children. So if the listener has a child, that is one way of connecting to other women. Other than that, it's about your aging. So depending on your age, being able to relate to that age group. What is it about you and you know about being a woman that is so precious? And to find out how you work with that energy. I would also say that women also do want to talk about relationships. And it's not about separating and divorcing and all of that. But sometimes we just want to share little snippets and little laughters. And I know in a different culture that can be difficult. But women actually do have a desire to share a little bit about their men. And I think it's humor that certainly works. So I would say the best way of connecting with the women and to helping them and helping ourselves to, again, accept other people's differences is through humor and through things that are involving our love. And love is usually around children.
Wow, you know, that's so intuitive of you because this person just typed in the chat before you said that. I want to teach them better parenting skills, no physical violence, but compassion. And this person says they are in a village.
Well, I'd start with the children. And also, if this listener is able, you know, one of the gifts I'm given is to be able to talk to people all over the world because of my work. And it's also about our own childhood.
Yeah.
And sometimes it, again, we cannot teach our children or give our children what we haven't received. Now, I certainly know that there are many great mothers and fathers who do give what they weren't received, but unfortunately the wound is still there. So I perhaps should just change that by saying you can give what you weren't receiving, but you also have to heal yourself. And sometimes just allowing women to talk about their own childhood, and you don't have to talk about the so-called negative. You can say, tell me something where, you know, that was a good experience for you in your childhood. Can you remember, you know, being carried by a parent or a grandparent? Or can you remember running in the fields? But being able to take a person back to their childhood in a healthy way is often also a starting point for all of this. Oh, and
yeah.
Food. Remember, women, their greatest gift is sitting in the kitchen or being around food and cooking. So another way in which we relate so well is through cooking.
Yes.
We don't have to be great cooks. We just have to be good stirrers.
Yes, it's a fascinating challenge that this listener is facing. And actually, I admire how they want to reach out, you know, and do what they can. And I think that many of us would feel that way, and we probably have confronted situations, even in the U.S. I mean, there can be situations that are quite limiting for women. I actually was in a place in the Midwest for a while where there were a lot of women around involved in a very conservative group where they were not allowed to speak in church, and they had to wear dresses all the time and had all these rules that, you know, really were disempowering them, and yet they were wonderful women.
Yes.
And you could connect to them. They were wonderful, and actually just listening. I mean, I found just listening, and actually they listened to me and were helpful to me, although in some ways they were trying to steer me into some fear-based things that were not helpful. But, you know, when I could be discerning, we could connect. And so I would guess this would be true even in the Middle East.
Well, I think that what we are talking about is no boundaries. Again, my experience of having worked in many different countries where it wasn't my religion, my culture, my face coloring, I've realized that if I can go in without judgment, because it isn't about saying that we need to change these people into our way of thinking, what's more important is, can I walk a mile in their moccasins? Can I understand them? And I realize how much harm we can do when we think that our approach, our way is better or different. What we need to understand is why, what is good about their approach? What is good? Because we don't continue doing something unless there's something we're getting out of it.
Yes.
And for some women, for instance, being in a relationship, even if it's a destructive one or an abusive one, they would convince me, no, I need to be in this relationship. And it's not for me to judge. it's for me to try and step into that place and support them where they are. And that is what allows people then to make changes, not because they're being pushed out of a situation, but because someone's alongside them that's giving them the compassion and nourishment to actually allow them to think in different ways.
Yes, and the chat room participant does say that, we all sit and prepare a lot of food and that it's challenging because of their religious beliefs since they believe they are not equal. So, but it sounds like she's finding common ground.
Fantastic. And remember humor. Just keep humor at the top of it all.
Yes.
And
now,
laugh
I know
at yourself
that,
and laugh at, you know, when we can laugh at ourselves, it gives other people the chance to open up.
Yes. Oh, so true. And if we can laugh together, it bonds
exactly.
us. It's so true.
That's
now,
often
I
when
know...
we laugh at the men, you know. Yes.
This hour is going by so fast.
It is.
And I would be terribly remiss if I didn't ask you a question that I must somewhat timidly approach, I openly say, because of my conservative background. You know, if there is something as we close out the hour, getting close, if you could speak to sexuality, Christine. I think we could do a whole show on this, quite honestly, but just opening up and what gifts it has for women. And I know many of us come with blockages. I know I do. I mean, it's an area that I'm working on, and especially if you come from, you know, certain belief structures that were ingrained and, you know, you're working on breaking free. Can you speak to that? Because it's such a powerful part of your book.
I can. I want to make it simple. There's only two processes in the world. One is sex and one is birth. And sex is the process of taking two different entities and bringing them into oneness. And birth is taking something from oneness and giving it a place here in duality. And that's all it is. And so I'm not being flippant at all, but I am saying whenever you have a close, respectful relationship where you can open your heart with anything, you're having sex. So if I'm watching the sunrise and I have that intimate connection with it, I'm having sex. And so when I say that, you can hear the most important words in any sexual encounter are respect, compassion, and honor. And I would start by saying is that there are so many wounds that women carry because they have not been honored, they have not been respected, and they certainly didn't feel it was a loving experience. And until we start to say that, you know, sex is a beautiful experience, the sexual arousal, the whole idea of being taken to that place of unification within ourselves through an orgasm. But the first step is, do I feel that the person I'm with or whatever, let's say a person I'm with, is respecting me as a human being and as a woman? And the most in a heterosexual relationship with a man and a woman, his job is to light you up, to bring you to literally help you to glow. And then his experience is enhanced because he now is surrendering in many ways to your energy. And so in any sexual relationship between a man and a woman, or a woman, woman, man, man, it is very important that there is one partner who is the one who is the receptive person, which is the woman in this case, and that the man, his main job is to bring her to her pleasurable place before he thinks of himself. And so what you're hearing me say is these are very basic ground rules, and I would like to see this happening in being taught to our young women especially, that they shouldn't be having sexual relationships unless these ground rules are in place.
Yes.
And this would change the face of relationships across the world, because much of the abuse that we see for women and children is because those respect and honor and compassion are not in place.
Yes, and it seems that you know, even the men need to, you know, how do we nurture this within our men? And I'm fortunate, I have to say, to be with someone who is patient and compassionate and empathic. I mean, spiritual, he's wonderful. And I'm so fortunate to have him in my life. And, you know, I feel like the shift will help us, that you know, we are in the midst of a shift in consciousness, and that isn't part of it that men, too, will awaken to treating women with respect once women respect themselves as well.
You've got that.
True?
It, you know, the men really need us.
Yes.
For us to, you know, in ancient traditions, when a woman was lit up and she became sexually aroused, she would literally create the rhythm to draw him up along her serpentine pathway, and together they would have their orgasm. So
mm-hmm.
a man need, you know, his only interest should be to light up his woman. And, you know, and I forget the orgasm, forget even the entering into someone. Just for women to be able to say, actually, your purpose here is to give me pleasure, which a lot of men are willing to do. that's a change. And the men desperately need us to be lit up, because without our lighting up, then they cannot reach their enlightenment.
Right.
And so many men, the sex for so many men stays in their groin, in their loins. And then we start to see diseases like disease of the prostate, disease of, you know, around the testes.
Blockages.
Because many cultures, prostate disease doesn't exist. We think it's normal. It's not normal. The only reason that it doesn't exist in some cultures is that they see sex in a completely different way. And the woman is the main person, who is the goddess through whom he is reaching his enjoyment.
Yes.
And when that happens, prostate disease doesn't appear.
Yes.
So
that's
the man,
really interesting.
You know, men are very much with you. And like me, like you, I have a wonderful man who says there's nothing more beautiful than a woman in her power. And I think there are many wonderful men who are standing by us at this time.
Yes. Well, we are actually coming to the end of the live broadcast, which has, you know, this has been such a wonderful conversation, Christine. And I just want to thank you for coming on to this show. It is really quite an honor, too, to have you here, because, you know, I greatly respect your work, as do a number of people who are listening. And so thank you so much. And I wonder if you could, just in a few words, let people know where they can learn more about you and, you know, what you have coming up.
Oh, very much. Thank you for that. It's been wonderful being on the show. We've had this
Thank
lovely
you.
Conversation, as you said, like having a cup of coffee. So
I
I've enjoyed
is.
It so much.
Thank
and
you.
Yes, please to go to christinepage.com, and you'll see all the things I offer. And in the new year, we're going to bring much more interaction into the website so that I can attract women to speak and to share their stories. So I just look forward to seeing some of you on the website.
Well, I think many of us will really be following your work with great interest and wanting to become more involved in the many things that you're doing, because, you know, it really is so wonderful how you're teaching people to empower and love themselves. And that really is a great service that you are providing in the world for people. And thank you so much for all that you do.
Pleasure, and thank you for everything you're doing in so many levels, and just for being the beautiful person you are. I can feel it through the phone.
Oh, God.
Just so open, and just allowing people to experience themselves.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that affirmation. I think I find that the more that we just, you know, it's so funny, Christine, if we can just be honest, that's the key to everything.
It,
you know, people
really
even
is.
Ask me, they ask me about this show, you know, how are you doing that? Well, you know what, I just got on the radio and started talking. and you know, that
well,
was a couple years ago. well, thank you so much. And we will all anxiously await, well, not anxiously in a nervous way, but in a wonderful way, anticipate this energy coming in next week with December 21st. And, You know, I know that many of us are reflecting on that together.
Yes. The beginning of a new world, a 26,000-year world. So one of greater love, greater peace, which is always what we want.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you again. And I do look forward to seeing what you do next. Thank you so much.
Pleasure's mine. Take care now.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. And just as we end this show, I know the live show has finished, and I know many of you are listening in the podcast. I'm just going to wrap up the show with a few show notes and then send you on your way. Thank you so much again for being with us today. And I wanted to let everyone know that the next show will be Wednesday, December 19th. At 12 noon Pacific, again, a week from today. And I will have on the show Phil Marcus, who is a very interesting man with a diverse background, very accomplished background. He is the author of Zen and the Art of Negotiation. And I think this will be very helpful to many of us who work in different business settings. And there are so many times when negotiation does come up. And how can we approach that from an enlightened point of view? So that will be Wednesday, December 19th at 12 noon Pacific. And then I would be totally remiss if I did not have a program on Friday, December 21st, and I will have that show at 12 noon Pacific, and I'm still making plans for that show. At this time, it is a very open format. I don't even have any guests lined up, although you never know, I might bring in some surprises, but I'm anticipating just having quite an open, reflective format, and callers will be welcome, as will chat room participants on that day, as we all reflect about what I feel will be a powerful energy. No matter what you believe about December 21st, no matter what you've studied, and you know, certainly our guest today has done a lot of research, and I have to tell you, I've enjoyed revisiting her book, which is 2012 in the Galactic Center, The Return of the Great Mother. So I would recommend that you pick that up. If you'd like to explore how 2012 can relate to some of these concepts with the divine feminine, as many have labeled it, or the great mother, as she does. But anyway, on Friday, December 21st at noon Pacific, I will provide essentially a space where we can be together during that energy. So with that said, I want to thank the audience for being here today and everyone listening in the podcast. If you want to learn more about this show and upcoming programs, as well as the past archive, please visit the website frontierbeyondfear.com. You will also find today's show there, as well as a link to various links related to Christine's work as well. So thank you again, everyone. And may you approach this time as, you know, we experience the energy of 12-12-12 if you're listening today, and also head into the energy of next week, which is powerful, and even beyond that, because you may be listening in the future. May we approach it with the highest intent and the most peaceful reflections in our heart, really opening up to those things that bind us all together, that love that is present for all of us. Thank you again so much for being here.